You're listening to Mind Over Motherhood.
Welcome to the Mind Over Motherhood podcast, your new favorite show for all things mindset, motherhood, and mental health. I'm your host, Dr. Curly Crew, a mom of twin girls, modern-day nomad, and MD psychotherapist specializing in women's mental health. I believe that life is full of challenges that can hold you back from being the best version of yourself and living your most incredible life. Your mind shouldn't be one of those things. So listen in each week as I share practical tips and expert strategies to help you manage your mindset, improve your mental health, and be the woman and mother you've always known you could be. So grab a cup of something delicious and let's dive in. Well, you guys, we are moving right through season two. We are already on episode number 18 of season two of Mind Over Motherhood, which is bonkers to me. Like, pretty sure season one was something like 60 episodes or 50 episodes. So this is insane in the membrane, y'all. Like, I can't believe how far this podcast has come. And I'm super excited because the last few weeks we've been talking about one of my favorite topics, which is, of course, anxiety and mood medications. And so we're going to kind of continue that conversation today. And I wanted to share with you some of the biggest mistakes that I see women making when it comes to managing their anxiety. Now, that sounds like I'm judging when I say that, the biggest mistakes women are making. And I don't intend it ever to sound like I'm judging anyone, because of course, that is not the name of my game. Shame is not the name of my game. But more, I come from this perspective of wanting women to be aware of the most common approaches or mindsets. And I know I covered mindsets in a couple episodes ago, but specifically, these are kind of mistakes and approaches that I see women making when it comes to thinking about their anxiety and learning about it and how they manage it, kind of how they approach it. So there might be a little bit of crossover between this episode and the mindset episode that I did, I think 3 or 4 weeks back. But I just wanted to expand on that a little bit and provide some perspective. I think that one of the biggest honors I have in my career and in my position is that I quite literally get to be in the brains of so many women, and I get to be witness to their joys and their struggles and their successes, and I get to be witness to their strength and their resilience and these amazing, amazing hearts that they have. And as part of that, I also get to see so many similarities that run between women and their minds. And I think for myself, it's so beautiful to see that, that I often wish I could share that perspective with everyone I know, because sometimes the insights I have, right, the similarities, the things that we all worry about, the way our brains work that we think just happens to us, you know, I see the same kind of things happening across the board for women. And I think that's really empowering information to know. So these episodes where I'm sharing, you know, mindset struggles or kind of mistakes that women are making when they are approaching their anxiety and learning to manage their anxiety better. Again, they're never coming from a place of judgment. It's always just coming truthfully from me wanting to share with you how similar women are so that we can normalize our experiences, find some connection and community among us, right? To realize that we really are all struggling with a lot of the same things. And of course, our situations are unique and our, you know, our access to privilege is unique, and the different stations or places in life that we occupy, our different roles, those are all very unique and different and beautiful. But the struggles that we deal with and the way our brains behave are very similar a lot of the time, right? The thought patterns that we carry around, the things that we think are really just our own, that we're the only ones that think this way and what's wrong with us. It's really one of my parts of my mission to just rip that apart and show everyone where we're so similar. And I think that that builds such a bridge between people, but it also helps just make us feel a little bit less abnormal. And I don't know about you, but when you're in the midst of a crappy day, it's just nice to know that sometimes other people are feeling like you are. So that's really some of the motivation behind this podcast and the podcast that I've been covering the last few weeks. So that was a long intro, but I did just want to share that with you. And I'm really excited. I am pumped for this episode because I think it's also going to just encourage you again to think about your anxiety in a new way. I am all about shifting your mindset because we can change how we feel just by changing how we think. And of course, changing how we think is not easy, right? It's much easier said than done. But the more we work at it, the more we fill our brains with positive and more constructive learning, the more awesome podcasts we listen to, the more awesome books we read, the more likely we are to make some real lasting change in our thinking patterns and then how we feel. To that note, you might be aware of the fact that my brand new book, You Are Not Your Anxiety, How to Stop Being an Anxious People-Pleasing Mess, is coming out. It's currently available on pre-sale, y'all. And this is crazy. This is truthfully a dream come true for me. I can remember way back when I was a child, thinking I'm going to be an author someday and I'm going to write a book and so many people are going to read it. And it is just blowing my mind that that's coming true. So my book is going to be coming out on Amazon on June 1st, 2021. And if you are listening to this anytime before June 1st, you can still order You Are Not Your Anxiety on pre-sale. And pre-sale is amazing. It's an opportunity for you to support me directly and help offset some of the expense of publishing a book. Because if you've never looked into that, it can be costly. But of course, it just shows me that you value what I'm doing and it helps me get my work into the hands of women who really need it. So what is this book all about? You're like, okay, I'm assuming it's about anxiety and you are right, but it's more than that. Like I really like to think about this book as it's kind of like this honest, no bullshit kind of come to Jesus talk with your sassy best friend slash doctor, right? Like I'm going to tell you some of my own experiences. I'm going to share some experiences from patients, of course, anonymously. I'm going to share experiences that I've seen women have. And then I'm going to talk to you a lot about ways to change your mindset around your anxiety and some really actionable strategies on how you can manage your anxiety once and for all and get people pleasing to the curb. So if you are looking for a new perspective, right? You love my approach and you're thinking, man, I need to know how to get my anxiety under control and get a better handle on it. This is going to be the book for you. And of course, the second part of the book is of course about people pleasing and passive behavior, which if you've ever heard me talk or you've ever worked with me, you know that I think anxiety and people pleasing go hand in hand. They are like pouring gasoline on a fire and we absolutely need to get people pleasing under control if we're looking to get our anxiety under control. So that was a long commercial, y'all, but if you want to buy my brand new book, You Are Not Your Anxiety, How to Stop Being an Anxious People-Pleasing Mess, it would make me so happy for you to pick up a copy on pre-order. You can do that on my website at curlycrew.com. Okay, so long introduction and preamble. Let's dive into the episode. So in this episode, I'm going to talk about some of the most common things I see women doing when they come to manage their anxiety or the biggest mistakes that they're making. Okay, so one of the big ones is assuming that there's kind of one fix for your anxiety or your mood disorder. A lot of these things are going to apply to mood disorders across the board, whether it's depression or anxiety, but specifically, a lot of people, we get this idea, a lot of women, we get this idea that we just have to find the right fix, right? Like the right perfect key to the lock, that there is one solution that if I just find it, and this could be like a medication, or I'm just going to read that book, I'm just going to take that supplement, I'm just going to do X, Y, and Z. We think that there's just going to be one solution to our anxiety as a whole, and it will just take it away completely, as if anxiety is a one issue problem, right? As if anxiety doesn't come from a variety of different things. So a couple episodes back, I shared with you, you know, the different neuro and cognitive pathways where anxiety comes from, the amygdala and the cortex. And that's super helpful to know where it's actually generated in the brain. But that leaves out so much as well about what causes anxiety. So what triggers it? You know, it could be things like lack of sleep, not getting enough exercise. Maybe you have a chemical imbalance and need meds. Maybe you're using substances that are impacting your mood. Maybe you're in a crappy relationship and you're refusing to acknowledge it. Maybe your job is absolutely draining and you have no boundaries, right? there's so many contributing factors, mental illness, mental health, and anxiety, all so multidimensional that assuming there's one fix for all of it is flawed, right? Even as you hear me talking about that, you're like, obviously, right? Like it's very uncommon. And I would actually say it's probably impossible that you're going to find one thing that's just going to make your anxiety go away forever and ever. Amen. Like, it's very tempting. Trust me. If there was, I'd be all over that, because I still, to this day, even with all my knowledge and experience, will have days of really bad anxiety, right? And it's not because I haven't figured it out. It's just that because this is the nature of anxiety, there's not going to be one fix, right? A lot of times women will be like, okay, I'm going to go on meds, and they'll feel a lot better. And I love that when that happens, because what a win that you finally get a break from your busy mind and you feel so good. But I hate to break it to you, even that's not going to be an end all be all fix, right? So I totally understand. It's very tempting. You know, you're going to be, I'm just going to find the solution, as if there's one to this problem that is so multidimensional. It's so dynamic, right? Our anxiety, our mental health changes as our life changes, right? When we have stress, when we're in a pandemic, when we lose a job, when we get a job, when we have a baby, right? These are all things that are going to impact our mental health and impact our anxiety. And no matter what you do, right, it's unlikely there's going to be one fix for it. Okay. Now, that being said, for some phases in your life, like, you might just need to do yoga all the time, and that keeps your anxiety under control, right? And that's awesome. If that's the case and you can find that one thing, fantastic, hang on to it. But I just don't ever want that to be, you know, it kind of upsets women when they come upon and their anxiety's back, but they're still doing that one thing that made it go away. And they're like, what the heck is happening? I'm broken. No, it's just that the mistake was actually assuming that there was just one fix, right? This is really common with like herbal supplements and medications, especially. We kind of get this idea. It's so tempting, right? You're like, oh man, if there was just one pill to take that anxiety completely away forever and I never had to deal with it, sign me up. Like, how amazing would that be, right? Unfortunately, it's not true, right? And with the one fix thing is that tends to kind of make anxiety management seem like a finite process, like as in I just need to get to the point where it's done and I check the box off and move on, right? And you listening to this might even be able to identify with that. And you're like, oh yeah, like I just have to figure it out. I often say, like, I just have to Rubik's cube the right solution. And every time you feel like you're Rubik's cubing a solution, it's probably isn't one solution, right? It's probably like you're trying to find a perfectionistic kind of check the box type of fits all solution that is not actually available or doesn't actually work. So it's an ongoing process, right? So mental health management, keeping yourself mentally healthy, is very much an ongoing process. There's no end point. It's going to require continual shifting and continual kind of like, what do I need now? How do I need to shift my life? What boundaries do I need to put in place? It's a dynamic process. Okay. So that was the first one. Assuming that there's one fix for your anxiety or your mental health problems. Okay. Two, ignoring the skills part of the equation. So I've often said, as an MD psychotherapist, I teach skills and prescribe pills. Okay. That's the beauty of my job, is that I can do both things. And of course, in that, there's even more. Of course, I talk to you about like food sometimes, and I help you get your sleep under control, and I can teach you skills in interpersonal relationships, so you learn how to have better, healthy boundaries and all those good things, right? But many, many people, many women ignore the skills part, and not just women. This is people across the board, right? Again, it goes back to this one fix idea that if I just take pills, like, it should be gone, right? And even thinking about that, you're like, yeah, that clearly isn't going to work, because a pill, as I've probably said before in this podcast, pills don't take away life situations. And let's be honest, life situations are usually a big part of our mental health and our mental illness, right? So it's usually a precipitating factor in your life. There's something happening in your life, right? Or you are, again, in a pandemic, or, you know, you just had a baby and that rocked your world, because holy smokes, doesn't it do that? And I can prescribe you a pill, but it's not going to replace or fix all the things in your life. Not that everything needs to be fixed. Of course, having a new baby is not something that needs to be fixed, But me giving you a pill isn't erasing the baby, right? It's not erasing you being postpartum. It's not erasing your relationship and how you and your husband don't have healthy communication, right? Whatever the issue is, right? And so when I talk about skills, I'm also talking about the skills to manage your actual mind. So even outside, like if we take it from outside your life and we bring it inside your brain, there are so many skills that you can learn to manage your own thoughts, to be aware of your own thoughts, to challenge them, to work with them, to be mindful. These are all skills, right? And I would say skills is probably the majority of what helps people really, really heal from mental health problems, okay? Skills are like the biggest tool in your toolkit. Meds, I think I usually say maybe 20 to 30% of benefit or of improvement comes from medications. And I'm not sure if I even said that in the episode, maybe I quoted a different number, but it's not as big of a deal, medications, as a lot of people think it is. You definitely can't assume meds are going to be the one all, like the one fix. And so we have to always be prepared when we want to manage our mental health that we learn skills, right? And so where do we get these skills? Well, for one, quick little intro for the book again, right? A quick little reminder, You Are Not Your Anxiety is literally a book about skills on how to manage your anxiety, okay? And then, of course, you would learn skills in therapy. This is why therapists, going to counselors, going to therapists, super helpful. A lot of people have a misconception about therapy and they think it's just sitting back and telling someone about all your problems. That is a big, big misunderstanding, right? You go to therapy to learn skills, so that you can manage your mind, so that you can change your behavior, so that you can give up bad habits that make you feel bad about yourself, all these things. Okay. So therapy is where you can learn skills, and also in, you know, different types of programs. So for example, my monthly mental health membership, the Unoya Collective, this is a membership program where I teach skills every single month. The members in my program, they get a new series of videos in a mini course teaching valuable skills, right? Emotional regulation skills, mindfulness skills, anxiety management skills. These are all actual tools in your tool chest for your mental health. And these are a huge part of the equation when it comes to managing your mental health. So if you are trying to get your mental health, your anxiety under better control, you cannot neglect the skills portion of the equation. Okay. That is the second biggest mistake I often see. I'm just going to grab some water here. Give me one hot second. Okay. The third one, and this is going to go back again a little bit to that mindset episode. So if you haven't listened to that and you're like, what is she talking about? I think it was episode 15 or 14 of this season, and it's mindset shifts you have to make to manage your anxiety. But one of the biggest mistakes I see women have when they come to work with me is I will say, what are you looking for? What do you need support with? And they say, I need my anxiety to go away. And I so understand this. Like, I completely understand this. You're like, no, I didn't have it before. It wasn't this bad, or, you know, it was bad, but I was managing it. I need it to go away now. And supernatural to think this. So if you're like, yeah, I need mine to go away too, I'm like, girl, I hear you. I want my anxiety to go away all the time. But it's such a flawed perspective. It's such a mistake to think that way. And the reason is ironic process theory. And what the heck is that? So ironic process theory speaks to the fact that when we try to suppress something like a thought or an emotion, or our anxiety as a whole, it rebounds, comes back way worse, right? When we try to avoid things like anxiety, it comes back worse, right? Has this ever happened to you where you're like, I just don't want to think about this thought anymore? And there it is, back again, back again, back again, back again, more powerful, more intense, more frequent. That is ironic process theory. Now, truthfully, ironic process theory speaks about thought suppression specifically. So when you're having, say, like an intrusive thought that you really don't like to have, if you try to force that thought away, it's actually going to rebound. But this idea of wishing things away and having them rebound expands beyond just thoughts. So that goes into our emotions, right? Anytime you try to suffocate or smother an emotion away, right? Does it go away? No, you bury it and then it rebounds way worse later and you end up blowing up, right? And it's the same with mental health issues. So if we just want to wish them away and hope they never come back, it's not a super effective strategy. Because instead, when we try to wish something away, instead of what we're doing is we're forcing it away. We're avoiding it. We're resisting it. We're not welcoming it and learning about it, right? We're not inviting it to say, okay, what do I need to learn here so that I can live with my anxiety in a healthy way? Okay. So wishing it away is a really common approach that women take to their anxiety. And I, like I said, 100% get this, but I'm telling you, it's kind of not going to work. Well, not kind of not going to work. It's not going to work. Okay. It's not going to work, y'all. So you need to instead go on back a few episodes, listen to the mindset shifts, but really start to try to approach your anxiety in a way that is like, it's probably not ever going to go away. And I need to instead learn how to manage it so that it can fluctuate up and down, understand it's going to do that up and down, right? And when it fluctuates, that I have the skills, because I've learned the skills to manage it. Okay. Different perspective entirely. Okay. Another common mistake that I see is, and I feel like sometimes I'm breaking bad news to people when I say this, like, I don't mean to sound like I'm raining on your parade all the time and being like, sorry, you think it's better, but it's not. But I say it out of love, just kind of to prepare people. So what happens a lot, and I referenced this a little bit before, women will go on medications and they will feel so much better. And I love this phase of their healing because they finally get a break. And usually when somebody has finally agreed to go on medications or decided that medications are right for them, and then they get the relief, I'm like, you have waited far too long for this relief. I am so thrilled for you that you are feeling better, that your brain is quieter, that you don't feel like you have to fight so hard to keep your head on straight, right? Like, this is a huge win, and I will never discount that. The mistake that I see happening is when women then assume their troubles with anxiety are gone forever, okay? And again, not meaning to be like the bearer of bad news and rain on your parade. Once you're well, I am happy. But I just often prepare women to say, your brain is a habitual animal. Our brain loves habit. And a lot of the processes that our brain goes through that to create anxiety, right? Refer to previous episodes. They are very deeply wired. And so while taking a medication very often can reduce the volume of the anxiety or the anxious spirals that we get in, and like all those kind of circuits that are really can turn on the volume, but those circuits are still there and they're still going. I often think about this as like a record player. I think you have a record player and the record's just spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning. The spinning record is your anxious thought patterns, right? Your old conditioning, your perfectionism, whatever it is that kind of worsens or triggers your anxiety, those records are still spinning. But what's happened is that your volume has just been turned down, so you don't hear them as loud anymore. And I love that. But we need to be prepared for when our brain gets louder, because that's what brains do. Unfortunately, I say this, I swear 100 times a day when I'm working in Unoya, like, your brain is a bit of a jerk and it doesn't have your best interests at heart. So after the volume's down for a bit, it's like, oh no, I'm going to turn this up a bit. And the anxiety patterns, the anxiety circuits, the loud thoughts, the busyness in the brain, sometimes, read almost all the time, come back, right? And they turn up a little bit again. And what women do when they start to feel better, right? Understandably, they're like, oh, I can take a break. I don't have to worry about this anymore. This has been such a big deal for so long. I can take a break. I'm like, yes, you can take a break. Absolutely. And then let's dive into the skills. Let's dive into the skills so that when your anxiety comes back, which it will, you can use the skills, right? Like, I love, and I spoke about this in the episode on the signs that you might need anxiety meds, is like, if you know the skills, but you can't apply them, that's a good time to consider medication. Then once you're on medication, now your brain is quieter. Now's the time to learn the skills when you're clear. It's not the time to act like your anxiety's gone forever, because it's not. And what will happen if you do that is that it'll come back and you still won't have the skills,
right? So use your, you know, brief respite from your busy, busy, loud, anxious thoughts to say, okay, now I have a chance, right? I got a bit of space in my bandwidth, in my brain to learn these skills. Okay. This is why skills and pills go together. Again, it kind of goes back to the earlier mistake I spoke about, like for ignoring skills. And this is an extension of the ignoring skills, but it's specifically, I wanted to bring it up specifically when women have gone on meds, because it's very common. Because what happens then is that women will go on meds, and I see this a lot. Women will go on meds, a certain medication, and I would say maybe anywhere from 2 weeks, but 6 weeks to 12 weeks to maybe even 6 months, really any time, their anxiety will come back again. And they're like, oh my God, my meds stopped working. What do I do? And if they see someone who is not super familiar with this, I call this the medication yo-yo effect, basically. If they see someone who's not familiar, the patient or the woman often wants to increase meds, change meds, or add on meds, right? They're often be like, mine doesn't work anymore. I need to switch to something else that does. And that feels really good because they're like, okay, I'm taking action. Great. I'm going to get my anxiety under control. Fantastic. So then they'll might taper from one drug to another medication. And then they feel this beautiful improvement again, right? And they love it. Okay, great. I made the right choice. And I get it. I totally get this, but I see this all the time. And then inevitably the brain again, because it's a jerk, gets loud again. The anxiety comes back. Those old records keep spinning. And they're here again. My meds aren't working. What did I do? I need to increase them. I need to change them. I need to add on, right? This is the medication yo-yo effect. And I see this so much. This is why a lot of patients come to me and they're like, I've been on 10 meds for my mood. And I often have to say that doesn't necessarily mean they didn't work. I wonder if we needed to try them longer and really, really hone in on your skills, right? So this is a bigger kind of conversation for sure, this medication yo-yo effect. But if you've ever been on meds and you recognize this, it's often not that the med doesn't work, in my opinion. And of course, this is not an across the board statement, but it's often that we're just not really honing in on your skills and you're not really applying them. And we're kind of defaulting to meds, again, assuming there's one fix. And this doesn't just happen with patients, okay? This happens with providers as well. It's very tempting when a patient comes in, as a doctor, it's very tempting when a patient comes in and is like, oh, I want to switch my meds because this one's not working. I want to go to something else. It's tempting to not challenge them and be like, sure, sounds good. If that's what you want to do, self-directed patient care, love that. But often I'll pause and be like, whoa, let's slow down here. What's happening? What else is happening in your life? Right? What skills are we missing? Are we using skills? Is meds, have your meds actually stopped working, or has life just gotten way busier and now we need more skills? So that's a little bit of a long drawn out discussion, but okay. The biggest mistake that I see women, and it's not even a mistake. Again, that sounds so judgy. I don't mean to be judgy. It's the biggest approach, I guess, women take to their anxiety that is not empowering, let's say, is being a victim to it, right? Assuming your anxiety has happened to you or is happening to you, that you can't do anything about it, that it has control over you, that it has all the power, right? If you've ever heard yourself saying something like, I have so much anxiety about that, I could never do that. If you ever say that to me in therapy, you probably know I would say something like, okay, that's not actually true. It's not that you can't do it. It's that your anxiety is telling you you can't, and you're choosing to believe it. Okay. There's a big difference there. Lots of women will believe that anxiety has control over them. And what that looks like is, I'm so anxious about blank, I can never do blank. It's as if their anxiety is an actual barrier or an actual obstacle. Not realizing that their thoughts of something being anxiety provoking, right? Which is your brain telling you something is a threat, right? They don't realize that just because your brain says, oh no, that's a threat, I can't do that, that's not true. That's just your brain saying it's a threat. That they can actually prove to themselves that those things are not threats and they can actually do whatever that is that their anxiety is telling them they can't do. Okay. So being a victim to it and being a victim to your anxiety basically follows from believing all your thoughts are facts. Okay. If there is one mistake that you need to take away from this episode that you need to change when it comes to your mental health in general, your anxiety, whatever, it's believing your thoughts are facts is a huge mistake. Huge mistake. Huge. Huge mistake. I'm thinking of Pretty Woman right now when she walks in with the bags and telling the salesperson who refused to wait on her, right? Huge mistake. Huge. Sorry, sidetracked. But yeah, believing your thoughts are facts. Guys, this is a terrible idea because our brains, I would say it's a bit bold, but I would say maybe like 95% of what your brain tells you is crap. Okay. Like so much of what our brain tells us is crap. And I say crap because it's like conditioned crap that has come outside in, right? We've picked up conditioning from childhood, conditioning from society, whatever. And then we internalize those voices and those are the voices of our brain. And then we believe it. And I'm telling you, if you can make one shift in your mental health that will be the most empowering and the most helpful and the most effective, it's challenging every single thought you have almost, like literally almost every single thought. And asking every single thought, is this a fact? Where did I pick this up? Because thinking your thoughts are facts is a recipe for disaster. Okay. I'm telling you, it's a recipe for disaster. So often we believe so much. And then when we learn to identify false thoughts, we're better at creating true thoughts. And when we create true, adaptive, healthy thoughts, that's the doorway, right? To feeling better is when we can be like, let's make sure we're thinking accurate things instead of living our lives, right? Creating emotions in our bodies with facts that are bullshit, to be honest with you. Okay. So this has been quite the episode. I got real worked up with this episode, but I hope this was helpful because these are things that I see really, really commonly. Women with these sorts of approaches. And again, this is normal. Like if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my God, I think about all of these things. Like these are all the ways I think. Like, girl, that's why I'm doing this episode for you, because I see this across the board with women. It's so, so common, you know? And that's why I really want to bring light to this and say, like, if you're thinking them, this is the same as a lot of women. It's also not helpful. And so let's give you some new ways to think about it. Okay. So just quickly to summarize, I want to go through these mistakes real quick. One, assuming there's one fix, right? That you're going to find that one penultimate kind of thing that's going to just fix your anxiety forevermore and you're never going to have to work on it again, right? That it's like a checkbox kind of situation where if I just fix it, do all the right things, fix it, and it's gone, right? This is not going to work. Okay. Ignoring the skills part of the equation. This is for a big one for people who are going on meds. You can't take a pill and make your anxiety completely go away. Can you medicate the physiological responses that your body creates? Sure, right? Can you take a pill and not feel your heart racing fast? You bet. But will it completely take away your anxiety? No, right? Depends on the type of med you're taking. Some of them might take it away for a good 4 hours, but those are not the healthy ones anyways, okay? Don't ignore the skills part of the equation. The next one, hoping your anxiety never comes back, right? Like ignoring it, thinking that once it's gone for good, right? And then ignoring the skills again, going on meds, assuming you're better, not working on skills, thinking it's going to be gone forever. This is a big problem. And you'll set yourself up for some serious heartache and I guess brain ache when your anxiety comes back and you haven't learned skills. Okay. Wishing it away, just wishing it is completely gone. We really got to shift that perspective. Your anxiety is not ever going to 100% go away. It's learning about how to manage it and live with it well. And then the final one is being a victim to it. Being a victim to your anxiety, assuming it controls you, and believing all your thoughts are facts. These are big, big mistakes when it comes to managing your anxiety. Okay. If you found this episode helpful, you will absolutely love my book, You Are Not Your Anxiety. It's kind of like me, as sassy as I am, as honest as I am, in like 100,000 words. Like it's quite the docket. It's quite the book. Okay. Cover to cover, it's going to give you tons of skills, tons of stories, tons of validation, tons of support, tons of empowerment to make sure you can get your mind under control, right? So that you can really finally get your anxiety under control so that it's not an obstacle for you anymore. Okay. I really believe that as women, we just have so much potential. And I say this all the time. We have so much potential. We are so influential in every sphere that we're in. And we want to do so much. So many of us want to do so much. We want to raise beautiful families and, you know, raise good humans. And we want to build amazing businesses. And we want to support people who need our help. We want to do all these things. And those are big, big dreams. And I think there's already so much holding us back from doing those things, right? Like there's enough obstacles in this world, right? We got to get more education. Maybe we got to get more skills. We got to get support. We got to have money, all these things. Like our minds, your mind, like the blob between your ears really shouldn't be one of the obstacles. Okay. I'm so passionate about this. And so that's where, you know, my book came from. That's where this podcast comes from. That's where my membership comes from, is this idea that if I can give women the information that they need, the skills that they need, the support and the empowerment to really manage their minds, like we can change the world, right? You can change the world. We can change the world together. And this is my mission. So if you're interested in a little bit of that, you should 100% go over to curlycrew.com and buy one or two or 10, you know, however you feel, copies of my book, because it would just mean the world to me. And it is truly, truly so exciting for me to be able to get this book in your hands. So I hope that this I hope this episode has been helpful for you. I hope it's a helpisode. And if you loved it, it would mean the world to me for you to take a quick screenshot, tag your girl on social media, and share it with some friends. Because I think if you have found this episode valuable, I bet you maybe one or two of your friends would too. And when you share it, we empower the world. We tell the others that they don't have to be prisoners in their minds, and we help them get the skills and support they need. So I'm going to stop talking now, because this was really a chatty episode. I promise you, I haven't even had any wine, but I'm very chatty today. So I hope this has been fun, and I hope that you've learned a lot. As always, please reach out to me at Carly Crew on Instagram, or on Facebook at Carly Crew, or in the Facebook podcast community. It's the Mind Over Motherhood podcast community with Dr. Carly Crew. You can find that on Facebook. And I will absolutely catch you next time. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much for listening to Mind Over Motherhood. If you love this episode, it would mean the world to me if you could take a screenshot, tag me, and share it on your socials so I know that you're listening. If you have questions or concerns about anything I discussed in this episode, or have ideas for new episodes, please reach out to me. I would love to hear from you. Catch you next time.